Blog Talk Radio.
Brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer. For only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way
to bring some love and kiss here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. It all just depends on what part of the world you are listening. That's right. What's going on? Bienvenidos, ¿qué tal? Namaste, Oki, and welcome. Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. I'll tell you right now, I'm sure it's going to be a very emotionally charged episode of the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosting duties. Live Mondays and Wednesdays, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio, holding down the other half of our hosting duties. Some call him the Lion's Historian. Others call him Unc. I just simply call him my best friend because he's my dad, Bill Green. Man, what's going on? What's happening?
Hey, man. I was checking out and digging Marvin's What's Going On song. I mean, just an amazing piece of work that he did. But it's one of those pieces that just never gets old, never gets dated. You know, it's
no,
just a
it's
matter
not dated.
Of
not at all.
Just applying it to the time. You know, so yeah. You know, I don't know what's going on. You know, I'd like to think I know what's going on, but things are just, I don't know, man. They're happening too fast. You know, at the same time, the same things. But the same things repeating themselves is happening, it seems, very fast, man. So I'm not able to keep up. All I'm aware of is that somewhere stored in me are the events, whether I, you know, have them sorted out or not. And so it's I keep trying to invent a new word just to say the old feeling. You know, I get tired of hearing myself say, man, it's scary. Okay, Yeah, we know that, but what else is it, you know? And what does scary mean? You know, am I in fear for my own mortal carcass? Yep. You know, am I concerned that my fear somehow suggests I am therefore not a true believer of my faith? Yep. Am I concerned that I may survive being shot but not able to maintain any kind of flexibility with my extremities? Yep. Am I concerned for the safety of my children and their children and those who I hold near and dear? Yep. So, and I could keep going.
Yeah.
But I think you get my point, you know. Yeah. And so scary doesn't do justice to all that I fear. So if asked to give somehow an appropriate response to an ongoing malady that seems to have been constant for the 75 years I've been on this earth, I really don't know how to explain it any better other than what's been going on seems to be what continues to go on. It just finds a new way to express itself. You know, so maybe today it seems in this particular season, it seems that the concern is mass shootings. I have a hard time separating the one from the overall fear that I've had toward violence in this country, you know, all my life, you know, at least all of my conscious life. Well, maybe I shouldn't even say all my conscious life. Maybe I should say all of my life since I was shown a body of a dead black body that had three initials carved in his swollen stomach that read KKK, and having it explained to me by my social studies teacher, Mrs. Stratton, that there is an element in our society that does violence to people with no conceivable, justifiable reason other than to satisfy their own rage, you know. So I don't know, man. Sorry to go off on that tangent, because I know you just asked me how am I doing.
Well,
I'll step out the way and let you reel it in, man, and take care of your business. So I hope you're doing okay, man.
Yeah,
I really do.
I'm doing okay. You know, there's things that happen out here. And we talk about and we read about, unfortunate events that happen. But, you know, it forces you to look at, you know, yourself, where you are, the people around you, you know, and I, you know, regardless of, you know, how bad it may be, you know, it's those opportunities to look around and look at myself and look at the people around me and look at us doing the shows. And I mean, I have to be appreciative and thankful, you know. I mean, that could happen to anywhere, you know. And I'm not going to get on the subject matter right now about Texas just yet, because we've got some due diligence. But I asked you, you know, what's happening, you know, what's going on, so how you doing? And I think you really engulfed a lot of what a lot of people are feeling right now, I think, anyway.
Mm.
You know. I think the whole scared thing is, just because we just don't know, you know, or like you say, it's happening so fast. And I need the process, you know, where's the override? You know, I need a minute. And I don't, you know, it's just like, how do you deal with this? How do you deal with that? I don't know. It's scary. Oh, I don't know. But before we go any further, ladies and gentlemen, as I mentioned earlier, our shows are live every Monday and Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, here on blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffect. That's FX, the letter F and the letter X. Before we get going really, really into the show, we'd just like to give you all a few reminders. The first of which is to grab a pen and paper, a pencil and pad, a post-it note, a marker, the back of an envelope, or Dad's favorite, a napkin. Whatever you got, we want to make sure you've got something to write with. Why, you ask? I'm glad you asked. because we want to make sure if you've got any questions, any comments, maybe something you might pick up from our discussion, we want to make sure you don't forget it or you don't miss it. So write it down. On our live shows, we have different ways that you can engage with us, one of which is through our dial-in number. You can call in directly, our number here, and hopefully you've got the pen and pad handy by now. Our number here is 516-453-6094. Again, 516-453-6094. And if you're ready to chime in, ask us a question or a comment, or just give us a nice positive shout out, press the one button on your keypad and we'll try to bring you in as soon as we can. Just a disclaimer we haven't done in a while here on the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. We use 1,000 words because 100 words don't do. So be patient with us and we'll try to bring you in as soon as we can. Another way you can engage with us is on our chat room on the Blog Talk Radio site, which you can engage and access with your free Blog Talk Radio account or profile. You'll see the chat room at the bottom of today's broadcast, and you can just hit us up directly. Yeah, what's up, Adam? You know what it is, 1,000 words, baby. The last way you can engage with us is through the One in Deer Facebook. We have our event page set up, and some of you may have even received a invitation. So in the discussion tab on the event page, you can also post any questions, comments. And sometimes I'll try to post some things up through our discussion. I just posted Steve Kerr's message during his news conference. Some of you may have seen that already. So that's just a little reminder from your friends at the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. And yeah, so that's where we're at. I know Dad might have stepped away for a minute, which is all good. So he'll be back in a minute.
No, I'm here. I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Here. I just had muted my line. That's all. Yeah. No, I'm digging it, man. I love the fluidness and the dexterity of how you do the overview. You know, it just fascinates me. Sometimes I get kind of transfixed, kind of lulled to sleep, kind of in a state of transformation, just listening to you do it, you know. And so what I would rather do is not distract from it by my rustling or clearing the phlegm out of my throat or swallowing real loud when I'm drinking water. I don't want to deny anybody else. Yeah, I don't want to deny anybody else hearing, you know, the due diligence that you do so well. So no, yeah, man. So here we are.
Yeah.
You know,
so here we are, man.
One thing I do want to do right quick is cover a little bit of what wasn't discussed Monday. If that's all right with you. I know that wasn't something that I had put on the plate. Are you okay with that?
Yeah. What's up? What you got?
The politics of racism, the seven factors of politics,
oh, yeah.
And how looking at them, just sort of a review, and how looking at them can be interpreted as maybe a little deepening or a little more clearer understanding of how racism operates in the political arena, but not really to get into detail about everyone. I had wanted to talk a little bit about the political economy, political science. Okay. And,
political science.
Just real quick, you know, the politics of racism as a consideration in considering the seven factors of politics, you know, has to do with understanding what it is to be political, having an understanding of political science. You know, that's number two. Three, the political party. Number four, political economy. Number five, the political map. Number six, the political system, separating the political system from the concept of being political, and the seven political factors all put in together. So an example of political would be relating to the government or the public affairs of a country, or relating to the interests of states and status, within a party, a political party organization, rather than matters of principle. And that's the thing I think that gets hard for people to separate principles from politics. I think people want politics to be consistent with principles. Principles rarely match up to any kind of political agenda. You know, just like... I didn't mean to bust out like this, but just like what you posted, you know, that video on your Mayor Lightfoot. And her giving that media interview on, I guess it was WBON radio, even though it had a camera on it, and she was talking some grand stuff, all political statements, you know, and to the point that, what did she say? You know, people don't want to hear that shit, or she's here to do what? I can't remember.
Yeah, she's here to get shit done. Yeah, that's what she
said. Yeah, and then you were writing your comment, and what did you say? She ain't done shit since.
3 years later, you ain't done shit. You ain't done nothing, man.
You know,
pooping
so
and hollering.
Excuse my cussing, but my point is, you know, it's like, yeah, could have used other words, but she said it, you know. And then you responded, yeah, she ain't done shit since. And that was 3 years ago. That just took me out. So that's what I mean by separating the political party and the interests of what the politician is saying from matters of principle, you know. And then, of course, political science. The study of politics, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second, a political party, an organization that coordinates candidates to compete in a particular country's election. And I saw somebody brought back again in one of the comments that I was reading, you know, one of those op-ed things where a person gives their own opinion editorial. That's what op-ed refers to. And they were saying that it's time for black people to consider, you know, their own party, their own independent party. And well, that's not a original idea. You know, probably most readily familiar is Marcus Garvey. And for me, more immediately would have been in the 60s where Elijah Muhammad was calling for a separate nation as well. And Malcolm X, in many of his talks and speeches, was also identifying the importance for black people to understand what it is to be a black nation. And then, of course, the book you gave me, you know, as a gift, you know, since my hardback disappeared, you know, Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. You know, these themes, however related to today, are not original in this context. But my thought is, you know, that, and I think I posted it on Facebook, and I'm sure people would kind of get a little annoyed at me, but I don't care. I mean, I do care, but I don't. I care that, you know, something I could write would be annoying, you know, but I don't care that in my being annoying, that it's not going to hurt my feelings. That's what I mean by, I don't, you know, it's not like I'm going to go, you know, climb on the ledge.
Yeah, not like me, you know. Yeah, not like me. Yeah, it's cool.
but what I said was, if we do that, we need to call it, you know, the Black Party. And I said we need to call it the Black Party because black folk will sign up in droves. All they'll want to know is where it's going to be, what time it's going to be, and what do I need to wear. But anyway. So moving on, right? Okay. The political economy, the political map, the political system, and political factors. So just real quick, talking about what I mean by political science as it relates to the politics of racism. It's the scientific study of politics, a social science dealing with systems of governance and power, and the analysis of political activities, political thought, political behavior, and associated constitutions and laws. Political science is related to and draws upon the fields of economics, law, sociology, history, philosophy, human geography, journalism, political anthropology, psychology, and social policy. All of these play a part in the creation of a particular race of people where no previous race existed. Thus, the white race and the Negro race in America. So that's what we didn't really, you know, get a chance to just capsulize Monday. Just wanted to just make sure it makes it to the archives. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and Adam put in there, yeah, the 12%. You know, I'm not gonna go off into the dirt road. I'm just gonna stay away from, you know, any further commentary on that. So anyway, just wanted to cover those, get those in on the record, so to say,
yeah.
And shift away from that into, you know, and just from Monday to today, right? What has transpired? I mean, it's I don't even want to use the word devastating. It's quite a symphony of misery right now, you know, and how quickly it can stir different aspects of consciousness, and not all aspects of consciousness are stirred in the same direction. Frederick Douglass, in one of my favorite quotes of his, says, the conscience of the nation must be roused, you know, and it seems to be right on the threshold of that happening, you know, but the threshold is not the happening, you know, it's the balance, and which way is the balance going to lean? And we have two very conflicting stances right now in American society. You have what has already just happened in Texas, this mass shooting, and then Friday you have the NRA convention in Texas. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talk about a dichotomy. You know, you have the governor talking his talk about the shootings, but at the same time, the governor here, Abbott, you know, governor of Texas, at the same time having a soundbite being played and repeated over and over again about California having per capita more people with more gun owners than in Texas. And his comment was, what's wrong with us? We got to, in your words, crank it up. we got to be number one. So, you know, no one can convince me that someone who can make a statement like that, someone who can be a speaker at the NRA, has any type of validity in any commentary he's going to make about a sympathetic statement regarding a mass shooting place in his state. You know, that's a little bit too much schizophrenia for me, man. You know, and I can really dig, you know, where Steve Kerr went off, and I, you know, like right on, Steve. You know, you have the mic, you have the spotlight, so your words are going to ring true. In contrast, you know, to what, you know, the other side of the argument would be like from a Governor Abbott. But my point is that somewhere in between, like, that shouldn't be the soundbite. You know, that shouldn't be the call to arms of what Steve Kerr did, and that's what's going to happen. You know, that should be the blueprint of what every coach, what every owner, what every trainer, what every player, what every referee should all be collectively talking about in one voice when he said he is tired of a moment of silence. It's time for silence to end, you know, and that moment needs to be somehow readdressed in vocal outrage and whatever means necessary to get the point across. I feel that athletes and entertainers, you know, have the pulse of the nation in such a way that they can dictate a raise in consciousness, a lifting of consciousness. Let me put it that way. Why do I say that? Because we use athletics, we use sporting events, we use entertainment as a means to decompress, as a means to distract ourselves from the situations of the times. And we've done that long enough. The time of distraction needs to come to a halt. And there's no better people collectively to be able to do it than those we turn to be distracted from the miseries that we just don't feel like we can handle day in and day out. Well, until we do handle those miseries day in and day out, we're going to keep retreating to these avenues of relief that these performers provide. You know, so yeah, it kind of startled everybody to see the rage and frustration in not just Steve Kerr's face, but in his voice as well. But that should be the common cry first. And I tell you, you know, if athletes and performers want to make a real impact, just have just one day, you know, of retreat, one day of whatever, not boycott or things like that, because all that does is just separate the gulf between the two warring factions anyway. But like a day of meditation, a day of reflection, a day of prayer, you know, a day where there is no entertainment. And while you at it, no commercials, nothing that can distract from what's going on. Man, you know, like 1 minute I'm hearing Steve Kerr and then there's a break and then there's a commercial and it's cartoon dogs running up a mountain chasing a biscuit. You know, it needs to stay raw. It needs to stay sensitive. It needs to stay tender. It needs to, the hurt, the confusion, the anger, you know, the argument, you know, doesn't need just one day of no break, you know, no entertainment, no sidebar, no place to run and hide, no moment to catch your breath, you know, but just one day where those who get paid to distract us are going to take a day off collectively and say, nope, no distraction today. Go ahead, man.
I'm with you.
I'm well past my 1,000-word quota.
It's okay. You know, I was thinking the same thing after listening to Steve, coach, talking. I felt the same way, you know, thinking about when he was saying, you know, we just this moment of silence. You know, and I couldn't help but think about the things that you have said in the past about making a statement, especially with athletes and entertainers.
Yeah.
And in this case, athletes, you know, where, you know, you can hear it and see it. You can see the emotion.
Yeah.
You can feel it on top of whatever personal emotion that you are already going through. And it's like, what if, you know, it's like, these senators, what did he say? They're holding on to their power, you know, but, you know, what if these cats just stopped and all of these people who get rich off of this stuff, you know, just to make that statement, you know, that this is a collective agreement, a collective effort. 90% of American citizens are cool with this thing that they want the Senate to pass. So just do it. Okay, you don't want to do it, so let's make this point perfectly clear. We're just going to shut it down.
We're just going to shut it down.
We're just going
to
shut it down.
Until you do it, not until you open the doorways again and get back into sessions. No, to hell with that. Go ahead, man.
Until you
shut it down.
And we all know that when it comes to sports, at least in America, if that happens, these cats will lose their mind, because now we're getting back into what you were just saying, the politics of racism. We're talking about, you know, economy, you know, and all these, it's and I want to stay on this point here with Coach Kerr and where we are right now, but it's I'm driving around, you know, doing my thing, and for a moment, it's just amazing how everything, it's not business, it's not personal, it's just politics. Mm-hmm. It's the commercials, it's the billboards, it's all these things that's happening. Buffalo, Chicago, Texas, California, you know, wherever, you know, and it's right in front of your face.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, okay, so now what? What was that we used to say? What now? Now what? You know? Okay.
What now? Now what? Yeah, man. Yeah, right on. And I see Adam, you know, Adam asked the question, why Steve Kerr? And I give him props, but I haven't seen or heard from anyone else. You remember
right.
when Doc Rivers
right.
did what
right.
Doc Rivers did? You know, yeah. when George Floyd, you know, it's like he made a statement. It was like, ooh, why Skippy? Right on,
yep.
Doc. Nobody
yep.
else had anything else to say.
Nothing.
It's the same. Go ahead, man. Sorry.
No, go ahead. It's nothing. And if anything, I think Kerr is just getting more, you know, more press, you know, but it's the same thing. But we hear from the coaches, but yeah, how come we don't? And that was the, thank you, Adam. That was the thing that made me, you know, that posed the question, what if they just stopped it all? How come we haven't
Amen.
Heard from the athletes? How come we haven't heard anything
yeah,
from these
and especially,
cats?
Especially those who have the open mic, like the Shaquille O'Neal's, man, that bores me to death. The Kenny the Jet Smith and the Charles Barkley's, they're right there. They were right there. They were right there up close and personal when Steve Kerr made the statements he made. Why not follow that up with even a deeper commitment to not dodging the commentary? Because that is not what you hired to do. Well, you get to say what you hired to do. Because you have that moment to do it. You know, they're not going to come in and snatch you out of those chairs, not especially as big as them two dudes are. You know, I mean, my point is, man, you know, just shut it down. We're not going to just sit here and play these little ha-ha games about, oh, ooh, ah. Now, we're going to talk about, I am tired of a moment of silence. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
There it is, right there.
The let me just share this like you said, just so I know it's in the archive. And by the way, check the chat room. Make sure I listed the points of the politics.
I got
and
it, man. Yeah,
correctly.
I was gonna say something. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
I want to make sure that our millions and millions of listeners out here are able to get, you know, the correct list there.
Doing your own
so
sound effects.
I had to jump in there and do it real quick. I didn't know if you were going to be ready for it. So.
No, but, I'd have been waiting for you to do just what you did, man.
yeah, we don't have Adam on, so he couldn't do it. But, right. No, you know, so I'm driving around, man. Like I said, I'm tripping, you know, doing my part to feed capitalism, but I need the income. But
but
again, you know, we're doing and we're doing these things that we need to do sometimes to take care of our families and things like that,
yeah.
right? So, you know,
yeah.
like Juneteenth is coming up, right?
Yeah.
And you know, Family Dollar's got all their Juneteenth, you know, product. They got ice cream
and
all this stuff, right?
It's a national holiday in Texas, dude. Go ahead.
So, yeah, I mean, like, people are getting paid holidays, you know, paid days off now for Juneteenth.
Yeah.
And it's just
yeah.
– and I'm not going to
– No reparations, but we're giving you
no.
a day off.
No reparations.
I'm sorry, man. Yeah.
No, and that's the point. And that's the point. No reparations. But we'll go ahead and pay you for that day off. Sure, go ahead and
yeah.
take that day off that
yeah.
you so reckless
yeah.
deserve anyway. You know,
right
I couldn't
on.
Help
right
but
on.
To think
yeah.
about these politics. In this case, number four, the political economy. You know, and,
mm-hmm.
and now we're marketing Juneteenth. And like I said, I'm not dogging it. I'm not trying to make anybody feel bad or anything, because whatever it is that you might feel bad or feel like you're guilty of, I'm sure I'm guilty of it too. So don't get me wrong. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, we see all this stuff now. Juneteenth has now become this new thing that they're going to continue to advertise. And now it's just another part of capitalism. But what if instead of making it a national holiday, right, what if every black person just didn't go to work?
Yeah,
what if it
man.
Was just that one day? And ain't nobody,
yeah.
nobody say anything. Nobody say nothing. And everybody
well, you
just,
were doing fine up to that. Go ahead. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know, man.
You
I'm
know,
saying
yeah.
what if,
you
man.
Know,
what
man.
If?
Yeah.
And what if? And
then
an ultimate
man.
Universe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, but and then
no,
that, and yeah. then that prompted me to think about athletes and just what we're talking about. So that's where my whole thought process started, was looking at Juneteenth, and then I went on to this situation.
Amen. And Will, you're not talking, you're not talking about something out of the spectrum of reality. You know, there was a bus boycott in Birmingham, Alabama, where black folks, since you ain't going to let me do nothing but sit in the back of the bus, to hell with that. I'm not going to get on the bus at all.
Yeah.
And you all deal with this lost economy. Well, they couldn't deal with the lost economy. You know, they thought they could outweigh the folks, but what the folks did was they came up with their own jitney service. They came up with their own Uber. You know, they provided rides for each other.
Yeah.
So everybody could still go to work and all them other things, but they just didn't get on the bus.
Yep.
And it wasn't like they had the internet, email, cell phones. All they had was what we've always had, word of mouth, and a few strategically placed beauty salons and barbershops and, you know, bars, you know, a church. I don't know, can't forget church. You know, really church. You know, church is where, you know, where the call was heard, you know. And that's the thing that a lot of black folks have forgotten, that our leaders were promoted in the church initially. The congregation decided who would be our mouthpiece. I'm talking about the late 1800s, early 1900s. The congregation approved of who would be our collective mouthpiece in Washington. And the congregation decided when you were no longer effective in the promise of what you said you would deliver. See, the congregation was that other party. You know, it wasn't Democrat, it wasn't Republican, it wasn't independent. It was the black voice that said, you are either going to represent us as you said you would, or we will find somebody else to take your place. And that worked early on, you know, but as all things go, you know, we got distracted by the sideshows, you know, mm-hmm. And so anyway, you know, but so, no, what you're saying is not something that, it's just that we have forgotten our, well, we haven't forgotten it, but we have put to sleep, you know, our own colorful past. I think in some ways even a little bit fearful of what it would call for to renew that power in number and strength. I think, you know, over the course of the last 60 years, government has done a good job of intimidating black folks to where now we kind of have, you know, we have people we've hired and put into political office, but we don't have the community worker. We don't have the bullhorn on the corner. You know, we don't have those who are collectively sounding disappointment with what our representatives, both black and otherwise, voted in office, aren't doing for us. We, you know, and government in its own, and I'm not going to get into conspiracy theorists, you know, but at the same time, history speaks for itself. You know, our heroes, our mouthpieces, our scapegoats, even our fear mongers, whatever, you know, all in one collective voice, although speaking from a different platform, made it clear, oh no, we're not a single people. We are a multi-ethnic group that you won't find minority as the statement that encompasses our flexibilities, dexterities, and our own diversities. You know, we're Muslim, we're Christian, we're not violence activists, but by any means necessary promoters of taking care of our own. You know, we're the vote registrars. We're the new, like Harold Washington, mayor of Chicago, right? First time he ran, destroyed. I mean, just, you know, people don't even know he ran.
Right.
Previously.
I was just about to say that.
That's how beat up he was. And yeah. when people came back to him, I remember Al Raby, that's the name most people wouldn't recall, but Al Raby was like one of Harold Washington's publicists, you know, and there used to be this place on the south side in Hyde Park called The Chances Are, you know, a restaurant bar kind of place, had peanut shells on the floor, that's what it was known for, Not that I paid any attention to the peanut shells. What I enjoyed was the black beer and the charbroiled hamburgers, you know, especially the black beer. But anyway, you know, and I remember kicking it with them, at the bar, you know, just sitting there talking. And he was saying that Harold had made it clear that he would not, Harold, you know, like I knew him, right? Harold was not going to run again unless his campaigners could promise 500,000 new registered voters. 500,000, bro, not 50, not 5, 500,000. Unless you come up with 500,000 new registered voters, you're not getting me back out there again just to feather your own nest. What did they do? They went out and got 500,000 plus new registered voters. See, we don't have that kind of, what is the cliche now, boots to the ground?
Yeah.
We're a country of cliches, you know. We don't have those boots on the ground anymore. You know, we don't have that kind of. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with you, but then there's a part of me, I'm not going to say disagree with you, but I think that there are people who have their boots to the ground. There are people with the bullhorns, with their soapboxes on the corner. But I think what has happened is that when we see these people, they are like a joke. You know, like we kind of laugh or we kind of snicker, like, look at this dude, look at this person, you know, making trouble, you know, being loud, you know, something like that. We're talking about two different things,
but go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying, like, sometimes they're there, but there may be a reason why we don't see it because, and I don't know, maybe I'm missing your point. But I'm just saying that I feel like there are people out there, but we're just not receiving it like we used to.
But that's my point. You know, I'm talking about not self-appointed speakers for the community. I'm talking about activists in the community that the community is recognizing with that bullhorn in their hand. Not the guy who is, you know, going to feather his own nest and holler and scream hoping for coverage. No, I'm talking about those not self-appointed individuals, but those individuals that have, like I've said to you in the past, about finding out what you would need to do to become like a councilman or whatever. You know, that it's, and I think you were told I think you did talk to somebody and they told you, you know, like one of the first things you have to do is go door to door to familiarize yourself in the community where you live. See, I remember I was doing a cable show in Chicago once, and it was to talk about the issues of substance abuse in the community. And the cable show also had somebody else who was being interviewed right before I came on. And I forgot her name that quick, sister, who I became mayor. I think she was right after Jane Byrne. And I had her name right on the tip of my tongue, and I forgot her name that quick. And you probably wouldn't remember her, but you should. But anyway, she was the first black female mayor. And Carol Moseley Braun, man, thank you, Lord.
Okay.
And Carol Moseley Braun.
Senator.
I didn't run into her. She was coming out of her interview as I was about to go into mine. There was a little break. And so we had a chance to chat. And she was up and coming. You know, nobody had really, on the bigger sound screen, had heard anything about her. You know, and I hadn't. And she and I was talking. And I asked her, what made her feel that, you know, she had, I didn't say she had a chance, that she had, you know, the ability to raise the consciousness of the community. And she said, because I'm in the community. And that's why most people don't know me, because most people don't investigate what's going on in the community. And right after that, she won. You know, she came corrupt later on, but that's beside the point. You know,
that's
what power tends to do. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, right? And but she won. And, you know, like, and the thing is, she had that enthusiasm. She had that belief. She had that promise in her eye. You know, that I imagine it dimmed over time, but at that time you could feel that she was walking by faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the thing I'm talking about. You know, that's the element of what I would even hope a show like this would eventually reach, where it becomes a forum, a format, a place where, you know, WVON used to stand for the voice of the Negro. That's what WVON said it stood for, the radio station there in Chicago when all stations were AM. It was before FM came into existence. You know, and there was always a platform, always a format where the community had like a 30-minute or one-hour sound bit where different aspects of what was going on was broadcast. And I'm hoping we find an avenue that will allow a show like this to find, you know, new energy, you know, a new vein of support that gives a platform up to the common person, you know, to say what we all are feeling, but have to depend on other people to say it for us. You know, that, man, you know, like something, this is what I have as my dream of a show like this, that if people aren't hearing what they want to hear, if in fact they're you know, too uncomfortable with speaking and saying what they are feeling, that they will let us know what they want to hear. See, that, you know, that's what I'm talking about, man. I know I've gone way off on another track, but I did want to just back up a little bit to what you said about political economy. The study of the economy, and understand what economy has to do with is the wealth and resources of a country. So the political economy is the study of the economy on a national level and its relations with law, institutions, and government. You know, so we're talking about law, institutions, and government. There's nowhere in political economy that talks about the study of the people. You know, the people are driven by the economy, and the economy is broken into law, institutions, and government. So when you look at, you know, what the economic strength of Black people is, I have to first be able to answer the question, what do I know, and what do therefore those who I am associated with know about the money market? Do we know anything about it? I know we buy shit, we own shit. Excuse me, man. I was forgetting, I'm on the radio. You know, we buy stuff, we own stuff, you know, we possess, but do we know, you know, what the power of that stuff is? Like the dollar doesn't last in the Black community anymore. You know, it lasts in the community for an hour. But do we even know what the Black community is? You know, it's no longer confined to the issues of segregation and closed housing. The Black community is where the consciousness of Black people are. But are we aware of that? Do we understand how to regenerate the dollar back into, you know, the fiber of the hood of the Black community? You know, do we understand, you know, what the real power base of that is? No, We see the money market as an opportunity to buy stuff, to own stuff, you know, but not, you know, that power of bartering that comes from what the political economy speaks to when it says, you know, its relations with law, institutions, and government. Most Black folks don't know anything about the bank that they put money in, like Bank of America, Chase, and all these, you know, these big banks that have these satellites. Oh, man, we pump our money into them, and we don't know where that money goes. But what we know is that it's not returned to the hood. You know, we don't have Black credit cards. You know, so when we raise the issue of political economy, we need to really take a crash course in how that applies to Black folks as a collective. And that's what I love about, you know, the book Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, yeah. Even though it was written in the 90s, you know, and I had a chance, you know, to meet Dr. Kimbrough, you know, when he was real raw, when he was first out there, you know, doing book signings, you know, for his book, you know, and so he wasn't a polished presenter. Not that took away from, you know, his polish, his, you know, his delivery. Quite the contrary. It was still so new to him that not only could you feel the passion in his voice as he was talking and explaining the history of the book and how it came to be, but it wasn't anything for brother. Choke up, man. Do you, you know, you want to, if anybody was to ask me what the inspiration was behind writing Dysfunctional by Design, that's where it came from. Hearing and seeing and feeling this brother being choked up by talking about something he did. Yeah, man, that's what I'm talking about. So, okay, huh. I've completely lost the audience now, you and everybody. I'm sorry, man. This is
no, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody does. I don't ever talk about it, you know. And it's not until like now talking about it that I realize I don't ever talk about that.
So, you had mentioned Governor Abbott. I didn't know he took a he's just throwing shade, as they say. He's throwing shade everywhere.
Throwing shade. I love that, man. When I finally figure out what a new saying means, yeah, man, he's throwing shade everywhere.
He's throwing, you know,
completely blocking out the light. He's throwing shade everywhere.
You know, he getting on California. I heard he was, you know, talking about Chicago. You know, instead of just tackling this issue of gun violence, he decides he wants to divert it to California and Chicago and things like that. So,
because he's a big supporter of the NRA, because, man, that's a war chest right there. You know, I know last year the thought was that the NRA was about to go bankrupt. You think big business was going to let that happen?
Of course not. You know that you mentioned war chest and Harold Washington. I mean, and not Ann Harold Washington, but you mentioned Harold Washington, where, you know, he needed new voters. Well, now it's like is that even anybody's agenda now? Are they concerned about new voters, or are they just concerned about their war chest? Are they just concerned about their campaign money? You know, now the politicians are evaluated based on how much money they got for their campaign and not, you know, for other things.
Well, they're not so much evaluated by that, but they're recognized as what potential they have for being able to carry through with their agenda, you know. And so that's what, you know, it's not as complicated as people want to make it. The bottom line is, the more lobbyists you have, that is those who are speaking up for you, the more they're going to generate those who are going to support you. And the more you have those generated who are going to support you, you have sponsors who are going to pay for you as long as they are a part of your agenda. So your messages with the right amount of money can just flood the market because there's no limitations. And you can lie all you want because there's no principles in politics. You know, going back to the principle of politics, it has to do with organizations and organizational rule, not principles. That's what we want to believe. We want to believe it is about principles. We want to believe that, you know, those who we really are pulling for, like the Bidens or the Obamas, whatever the case may be, that they really don't get sucked into, you know, a hidden agenda. Man, you know, it's the nature of politics, you know. So dictates, you know, to the winner goes the spoils. I'm sorry, Will, I cut you off again, man.
No, I just wanted to just touch on that. But my original intention was kind of steer this ship towards, you know, the subject matter that's really on everybody's mind, you know, what's going on and what's happened down in Uvalde and, you know, Buffalo and Chicago and all these places, you know, and I know that, you know, this is, you know, always been, this strikes you on a different chord, you know, than me. But I mean, we both have our concerns about gun control and gun rights and just, you know, just what's going on this land, in this country. Yeah. And I know I see Adam in the queue, but I know that there was a couple of points that you wanted to touch on in relation to what happened. And again, just
It ain't going anywhere. Bring Adam in, man. Yeah.
How was it? How was it? Okay.
I got it on paper, so it's still here. Yeah.
All right. We'll go ahead and bring Bray Primo in then. Hey, good evening. Good evening, caller. Thanks for chiming in tonight. Welcome
that
to the Greenhouse Effect radio show.
That has to be the best introduction I've ever gotten. The hell with it. I can just talk about my stuff next week. Just bring him in, man. Come on.
Hey, man.
My man. Yeah. What's up, cuz?
What's going on?
What's up, you guys? Not loving the show as usual. It's just everything is so hypocritical.
Good word.
Because and I'm gonna call people out. Republicans are pro-life, no abortions, no this, no that. But the minute a shooter goes into a school and someone starts talking about gun control, everybody's like, well, no, that's their right. And that's the crap that I don't understand.
Yeah,
you
well,
can't
that's
be,
part of it.
You can't sure. be pro, and you can't be pro-life, and then be like, "Well, no, everybody can have a gun." And it's like Oprah Winfrey. You get a gun, and you get a gun, and you get a gun, and you can go shoot, and you can go shoot, and you can go shoot, and there's zero accountability.
Yeah, yeah, and backing up a little bit to an earlier comment you made about being pro-life, that's great. Bring the baby into the world, but we're not going to, even though all the things that have to do with why you want, just as an example, why you want an abortion, for whatever those things are, we're saying bring that child into the world, but we're not going to develop or we're not going to bring into law the very programs that you're going to need to ensure that this child will be a healthy child. See, that's what
absolutely.
Hypocrisy is. You know, so
yeah.
That's as far as that's concerned, and I'm hearing you. So we're talking about all this pro-life business, but at the same time, we're not going to regulate laws that keep, I don't even want to start getting into hyperbole, but keep mass shootings from happening in wherever they happen. You know, whether it's a classroom or whether it's a street corner. You know, a mass shooting is, by government, connoted as anything that causes injury and or death or a combination of the two to four or more people. Well, isn't that wonderful? So what about all the drive-bys? What about all the one-on-ones? You know, anyway, the hypocrisy of it. What a great word, man. Go ahead, Adam. I'm sorry, man. Wow, you just got me going, man.
No, absolutely. And that's what it is. It's that whole, I think I heard, or I was reading something today, and it was a quote from the NRA that Ted Cruz had said. And it's exactly. But it's... one good guy with a gun can stop one bad guy with a gun. Well, just arm the teachers.
And that's what they started talking about in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't too far removed from that. What Sandy Hook? Yeah.
You know.
I mean, this is you know, like, go ahead, man. Dang, I'm sorry. I got to use some respect.
No. But I hate to say it this way, but a lot of people that are like, well, no, we have to live by, we're going to live by and die by the Bible. You know, homosexuality is wrong, and they need to be dead, and they continue to go on. But one of the things is they say an eye for an eye, but an eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind.
I can't.
You're not.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You're not missing anything. if you can't address the problem, if you're saying, well, no, we're not going to do gun laws because they don't work, well, you haven't tried it. At least try it and see if anything changes.
Oh, there are gun laws. There's gun laws that even been passed by the House. It's just right now being blocked by the Senate. But there are other gun laws that have, you know, go ahead, Will.
And no, I was just thinking that there are, you know, restrictions in different. It's interesting how, you know, the federal government will say, well, we'll just leave it up to the state, and then they can just make up their own laws and their own rules when it comes to guns, abortion, marijuana, whatever, right? Like in Massachusetts, like in Illinois, you can't just get a gun. You know, I got one. It took me, I don't know, 21 days, something like that. I had to go through the paperwork, the background check, you know, and things like that. So it wasn't like it was just that simple, you know. So it's not like every state in the United States is just, yeah, I can just walk up on anywhere and just buy one. You know, I can't go to Indiana. You know, there are restrictions, but it just seems like there's so many inconsistencies when it comes to the entire whole in America. What it seems like, I don't know, like in Massachusetts, like, you know, can you just buy one over the counter? You know, what are the laws and restrictions in Massachusetts or Connecticut?
Yeah, I have no clue, but I've heard of people going to gun shows and not wanting to do it like legally and not wanting to follow the rules, mm-hmm. but just going to a gun show. It's like, hey, I want to buy a gun, and it's like, okay, sure,
okay. But rather than get into, you know, innuendo or gossip, I mean, there's some things that are right in front of us. Like 21 states have gun laws allowing residents to carry concealed handguns without a license. You know, I mean, this is where the hypocrisy to me comes into play. You know, and it's things on the political spectrum that needs to be a regular part of conversation. So it just doesn't sound like angry people going off on a tangent. You know, it's the matter of politics that requires individuals to be held to standards reflective of facts. The things that you pass are the things we want to hold you to, not whether somebody can, you know, find a gun in the black. I don't know why they call it. Well, I do know why they call it black market, you know. Because it's a market available to black people. So let's go there and get it. You know, anyway, you know, we got this thing called ghost guns right now. See, look, making guns is a big industry that has an incredible lobby called the NRA. If we collectively want to begin a mass movement to dictate social change, join the NRA and vote against everything that they are for.
Right.
But being a member of it is where the effective vote will come in handy. But most people don't think like that. So, you know, we have to see things for what it is, not for how we want it to be. Look, when Obama first started trying to make a move to bring about effective gun laws, the explosion of gun purchases was off the hook.
Because they're going to walk into your house and take your gun.
Well, yeah, but more so than that. I mean, that's the cute way to put it. He, which we're still dealing with today, he generated an unexpected fear. You know, the idea was Obama became metaphor. He's coming after our guns. What's going to protect us from Negroes?
Sorry.
You know, we keep wanting to avoid the obvious. Yeah, go ahead, man. I mean, I'm sorry, y'all. Come on, man.
And the way to protect yourself is go out and buy 87 AR-15s.
Just buy one. Just make sure you have the stock you need and make sure you have plenty of ammunition. You know, Chris Rock said something a few years ago that was – everybody laughed, but, you know, he was right on. He said, man, don't worry about, you know, regulating guns. said regulate ammunition. If one bullet costs $10,000, ain't nobody going to be quick to shoot somebody else. You know, or
I mean,
they shoot and miss.
I mean, yeah. No, I'm saying, like, look when, what was that, last year or late 2000? Either last year or the year before last, like, ammunition shot up because everybody was getting guns. And then ammunition went up. So, I'm sorry. I was just like, yeah, that's it kind of calmed everything down.
And you're going to rethink what you're shooting at.
You know, and you're going to rethink. You know, somebody posted something, one of our relatives posted something on Facebook that there's irony and humor in the tragedy of the truth. He said, right now, there's somebody cleaning out and oiling up their weapon who is saying, based on the number of what happened here in Texas just a couple of days yesterday, he said, oh, I can top that. You know, that's the scary element of the unpredictable mass. And I agree with y'all. And even though y'all didn't just say it, I've heard you mention it in other conversations. Everything can't be blamed on mental illness. But mm-hmm. there are some crazy people mm-hmm. out here who do some crazy shit.
Yeah, man. Know? Yeah.
And when you start looking at, okay, so what happened, you know, to government dealing with the issue of the increase in mental illness in the 80s? Well, you had a president who said the answer to everything is just say no. You know, that was Ron and Nancy Reagan's big cry to society. If there's a problem, just say no. You know, if you strung out on drugs, just say no. If you're dealing with peer pressure, just say no. If you're feeling depressed, just say no. If you're broke, just say no.
Because that fixes everything.
Just say no. Of course, then another program was developed from that saying, okay, but now we got to teach people refusal skills. So this is the joke of society, you know. Anyway, I don't know, man. All I know is that, you know, if what we try hasn't been tried before, then we have a chance for success. And as far as I can tell, what has been tried to some extent has been more than effective in the 60s when you saw entertainers and athletes walk, male and female, walking arm in arm with King and his followers crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Man, that's what I'm talking about.
And the problem is we don't have that anymore.
That's the point. Well, yeah, man, that's what we've been screaming about for the last hour, right, Will?
No, absolutely.
Yeah. We've been screaming about for the last hour. Yeah, man. So,
but it seems like it's more like I have mine, I'm going to do me, and you guys figure your own stuff out.
Well, in some ways, that's not too far off. It's just a matter of understanding who is the mouthpiece of I'll do me. That is pretty much the statement of American society today. This is very much a me institution, not a us institution. The things that this government used to declare war on are now, you know, like the war on poverty is now the war on the poor. You know, the war on racism is now the war on equal rights. You know, the war on discrimination is now the war on affirmative action. You know, so the war on women's rights, you know, is now the war on Roe versus Wade. You know, so
I'm going to sit on my throne and play Monday morning quarterback and say, well, you should have done this and you should have done that.
Who should have done this and who should have done that? What are you referencing?
Well, like with gun laws, well, you should have you should have banned extended cartridges. You should have banned. Everybody is easy to see a situation and see a situation and say, well, if this would have happened and if that would have happened, we could have prevented this.
No, the argument today is this needs to happen and that needs to happen. It's not like that isn't the argument. That is. The issue is the prevailing forces, the one contrary to the other. That's the issue at hand. You have a policy enforcement from one group of people that is totally contrary to the cry of the other people. Look, the vast majority of American society, based on what we have available to us, which is called stats, you know, wants a complete overhaul of gun rights, a complete overhaul of it. The vast majority of Americans want Roe versus Wade to remain. The vast majority of Americans want equal rights. The vast majority of Americans voted for Joe Biden. But that's not – you used the word earlier, man. Don't forget that word. We're dealing with the hypocrisy of government. And the hypocrisy is the issue at hand. It's not what we should have done. It's what we can't get done because of hypocrisy. And there's just enough strength in numbers, strategic numbers, by the way, that allows those who are in power to remain in power. And the idiocy that they show doesn't matter. Absolutely does not matter. That's hypocrisy at its best. You have an NRA conference in Texas 4 days after this massacre. And you're going to have people like Ted Cruz and Greg Abbott who are going to be keynote speakers. You think they're going to get up there and say, we need to stop what we have allowed? They're going to get up there and say one bad apple does not spoil the bunch. And the vast majority of people, the millions of people who own guns don't go out and kill
are going to sit there and cheer them on.
Better believe it and start throwing bullets up on the stage.
But, I mean, isn't this all still the American way? Isn't this still... You know, when we talk about guns, I can't help but think about how America was built through force and guns and massacres and death. And it's like guns are part of this country. You know, I mean, they're like intertwined together. It's like the DNA, you know. So even to talk about guns is kind of like identifying one of the problems that's made America great. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the U.S. has the highest gun suicide rate per capita than any other country on earth. About 7 per 100,000 people a year kill themselves with a gun. But we'll look at that number and say 7 out of 100,000, and the numbers don't mean anything because we're not hearing the stories often enough for it to really get our ilk. You know, we're a placated people, you know, that is pretty much determined by ratings. So how could 2 years pass since George Floyd was killed, and that has nothing to do with what the conversation of American society is today? All the hoopla, the world responded and reacted. Where's the inertia? Where's the momentum? Where is the shift? You ain't going to find it in ratings, so you're not going to find it. So, yeah, this country was founded on violence. You know, this country used violence to separate from violence. You know, and it's not like, you know, those native to this country were, you know, peaceful dwellers. You know, they fought for their territorial rights and the protections of their families as well. You know, but that's not the driving force of what has created this madness. It's industry that has done it. Greed, the want for power, and to dictate to the world that you will knuckle under my rule. Yeah, in America we call it democracy, but what about the people that are supposed to be under democratic rule? My people are called minorities. How can you be a minority in a democratic society? You're either equal or you're not. But we don't say you're not equal. We say you're a minority. So, you know, and we'll control you. And we'll control you with by any means we have necessary. I mean, man, I'm sorry, Will, it's 15 after 8, man. I'm shutting down. Thank you, brothers, for letting me go on and on and on. And I'm going to let you all settle it, man.
Well,
no,
I mean,
thank you for the insight.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So I believe that I think the was it HR 8 or whatever the bill goes. What happened? They're like going to talk about it Tuesday. Well, we can talk about it Monday and see. I'm sure some other things will develop between now and Monday.
Guaranteed.
Guaranteed. So you know, tune in, ladies and gentlemen. You know, again, Mondays and Wednesday nights, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. We are live. Our shows are saved on Blog Talk Radio. Again, blogtalkradio.com/The Greenhouse Effect. That's the letter FX. Our shows will be coming back on your favorite platforms pretty soon. But right now, just come here to Blog Talk Radio to review any episodes you might have missed. Adam, as always, man, I appreciate you, you know, sticking with us today. You know,
shout out to Jay Pastor, too. Yeah, man. Yeah.
Oh, right on. Jay Pastor, right on, right on. Mm-hmm. Glad you recognize the number. Thank you. You know, we posted up the politics of racism, so I know we'll be hitting that periodically through our shows as well. So until
Monday.
Well,
you did warn us at the beginning of the show, though, that it was going to get kind of.
It was going to get a little, yeah. It was going to be a more emotionally charged because we display a lot of emotions on our shows, period. But this was going to be a different kind of emotion. So
yeah.
I think for the time that we have.
Thank you, yeah. Thank you, Adam, for hanging in, man. You know, with
yeah.
all this.
Always.
Yeah. And, you know,
hypocrisy, that's the word.
Yeah. To those that support the hypocrisy or those that are just trying to figure out, I'd be remiss if I didn't remind you all.
Wake up, goddammit!
My man.
Right on.
It wouldn't be the show without it.
Hey, so I'm Will. That's Bill over there and Adam, too.
I'm Bill. Yeah.
As always, Adam. We appreciate you all taking the time to listen to our show. Here at the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show, we provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking, experience a renewed self-awareness, and maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experience, especially when we share interpretations and feelings. I'm trying to stay straight. He keeps laughing. As always, ladies and gentlemen, please be safe, be blessed, and most importantly, be yourself because, man, everybody else is taken. Daddy-O, love you. Adam, love you too, cuzzo. You all stay
love
safe
you, love
out
you,
there.
Love you brothers back, man. Absolutely, yeah.
Love you guys too, man.
And until Monday, we'll talk to you all again. Take care.
Amen.
Good night. Amen.
Yeah. Mother, mother, ooh.